The Cessna was just coming in over the fence at the far end of the strip. As Craig glanced back at her, Sally Ann touched down and then taxied at speed down the strip towards the racing Toyota. Above the airstrip, the tiny figure of a man fell clear of the lumbering Dakota, and the green silk parachute flared open almost instantly. He was followed in rapid succession by a string of other paras, and the sky was filled with a forest of sinister mushrooms, poisonous green and swaying gently in the light morning breeze, but sinking towards the parched brown turf of the airstrip. The Cessna reached the end of the strip and swung around sharply in a 180-degree turn. Only then did Craig realise that Sally Ann had been far-seeing enough to assess the danger and urgency, and that she had landed with the wind behind her, accepting the hazard of the higher approach speed and the longer rollout in order to be able immediately to turn back into the wind for her takeoff, which would be with a full load and under attack from the paras. On the cab, Tungata was firing up into the sky, measured, controlled bursts, hoping more to intimidate the descending paras than to inflict casualties. A man dangling on swinging parachute shrouds makes an almost impossible target. Sally Ann was leaning out of the open cockpit door, shouting and waving them on. Already she was running up her engine to full power, holding the Cessna on the wheel brakes. They bumped over the verge of the runway, and Craig swung the Toyota into a brake-squealing skid, parking so as to screen and protect the aircraft and themselves while they made the transfer. "Get out!" he yelled at Sarah, and she jumped down and ran to the aircraft. Sally Ann grabbed her arm and helped her swing up and tumble into the back seat. On the cab, Tungata fired a last burst with a heavy machine gun. The first three paras were down, their green parachutes rolling softly in front of the light breeze, and Tungata's bullets kicked dust amongst them. Craig saw one of the paras fall and drag away loose and lifeless on his shrouds. Craig grabbed the AK-47 and the bag of spare ammunition and shouted, "Let's go, Sam, let's go!" They ran to the Cessna, and Tungata, weak and sick, fell at the steps, and Craig had to drag him to his feet and shove him up. Sally Ann let go the brakes before Tungata was aboard, and Craig ran beside the Cessna as it gathered speed. Tungata fell into the back seat beside Sarah, and Craig jumped up and got a hold. Though he was hampered by the AK rifle and bag, he dragged himself into the front seat beside Sally Ann. "Get the door closed!" Sally Ann screamed, without looking at him, all her attention on the strip ahead. The dangling seat belt was jammed in the door, and Craig wrestled with it as they built up to rotation speed. Craig managed to extricate the strap and slam the door closed. When he looked up, he saw paratroopers sprinting forward from the edge of the strip to intercept the Cessna. He did not need the shiny general's star on the front of his helmet to identify Peter Fungabera. The set of his shoulders, the way he carried his head, and the fluid, cat-like grace of his run were all distinctive. His men were spread out behind him. They were almost directly ahead of the Cessna, only 400 or 500 paces ahead. Sally Ann rotated, and the Cessna lifted its nose, bounced lightly, and became airborne. Peter Fungabera and his line of paratroopers disappeared from view under the nose and engine section as the Cessna climbed away, but the aircraft would have to pass directly over the top of their heads at little more than a few hundred feet. "Oh, mother," Sally Ann spoke in almost conversational tones, "this is it." And as she said it, the instrument panel in front of Craig exploded, covering him with fine chips of glass like sugar crystals. Hydraulic fluid sprayed over the front of his shirt. Machine gun fire came in through the floor of the cabin and tore out through the thin metal roof, so the interior was filled with a gale of swirling wind as the slipstream found the holes. In the back seat, Sarah cried out, and the body of the machine was racked and jarred by the storm of AK-47 bullets. Craig felt the seat under him jump as bullets smacked into the metal frame. Jagged punctures appeared miraculously in the wing roots just outside his window. Sally Ann shoved the control wheel forward, and the Cessna dived back towards the airstrip again with a gut-swooping rush, ducking under the maelstrom of machine gun fire and giving them a moment's respite. The brown earth came up at them, and Sally Ann caught the Cessna's suicidal dive and held it off. But the wheels hit the surface, and they bounced wildly 30 feet back into the air. Craig saw two paratroopers dive to the side as the plane raced towards them. That wild dive towards the Earth had pushed their speed way up, so that Sally Ann could instantly throw the Cessna into a maximum rate turn, the port wingtip brushing the Earth. Her face was contorted, and the muscles stood proud in her forearms with the effort of holding the Cessna's nose up in the turn and preventing her from going in. Ahead of them, on the left-hand side of the airstrip, only 100 yards or so from the verge, stood a single tree with dense, widespread branches. It was a marula tree, 90 feet tall. Sally Ann levelled out for an instant and flew for the marula. Her wingtip almost touched its outermost branches, and immediately she threw the Cessna into an opposite turn, neatly placing the tree between them and the line of paratroopers on the airstrip behind them. She kept at ground level, her undercarriage brushing the tops of the maize plants in the open fields, glancing up in the rearview mirror above her head to keep the marula tree exactly behind the Cessna's tail, blanketing the paratroopers' field of fire. "Where's the Dakota?" Craig asked, raising his voice above the rush of wind through the cabin. "It's going into land," Tungata called, and twisting in his seat, Craig had a glimpse of the big grey machine going in low over the treetops behind them, lined up for the airstrip. "I can't get the undercarriage up." Sally Ann was thumbing the rocker switch, but the three green eyes of the undercarriage warning light still glared at her from the console. "We have damage there. It's stuck." The forest beyond the open fields rushed towards them, and as she eased back on the control wheel to lift the Cessna over the treetops, a hydraulic lead burst under the shot-ruptured engine housing, and hydraulic fluid sprayed in viscous sheets over the windscreen. "Can't see, can't see!" Sally Ann cried, and pulled open her side window, flying by reference to the horizon under her wingtip. "We've got no instruments," Craig checked the shattered panel. "Airspeed's gone, rate of climb, artificial horizon, altimeter, gyro, compass." "The undercarriage," Sally Ann interrupted him. "Too much drag. It will cut down our range. We'll never make it back." She was still climbing, but gradually starting to come around onto her course, using the compass in its glass oil bath above her head, when the engine stuttered, almost cut, and then surged again in full power. Quickly, Sally Ann adjusted pitch and power settings. "That sounded like fuel starvation," she whispered. "They must have hit a fuel line." She switched the fuel tank selector cock from starboard to both, and then glanced up at Craig and grinned. "Hi there! I missed you something awful."
"Me too." He reached across and squeezed her thigh.
"Time check," businesslike again. 0517 hours, Craig told her and looked overside. The brown snake of the Tooty Road was angling away towards the north, and they were crossing the first line of hills. Vuzamanzi's village would be out there a few miles beyond the road. The engine missed again, and Sally Ann's expression was taut with apprehension. "Time?" she demanded again.
0527, Craig told her.
"We'll be out of sight of the airstrip by now. Out of earshot, too. Fungabera won't know where we are, where we are heading."
"They have got a helicopter gunship at Victoria Falls," Tungata leaned forward over the seats. "If they guess that we are heading for Botswana, they will send it down to intercept."
"We can outrun a helicopter," Craig guessed. "Not with our undercarriage down," Sally Ann contradicted him. And without another warning, the engine cut out completely. It was suddenly eerily quiet. Just the whistle of the wind through the bullet holes in the fuselage, the propeller windmilling softly for a few seconds longer, and then with a jerk stopping dead and pointing skywards like a headsman's blade.
"Well," Sally Ann said softly, "it's all immaterial now. Engine out. We are going in." And then briskly she began her preparations for a forced landing as the Cessna started to sink gently away towards the broken, hilly and forested land beneath them. She pulled on full flap to slow their airspeed.
"Seat belts, everybody," she said. "Shoulder straps also." She was switching off the fuel tanks, the master switches, shutting down to prevent fire on impact.
Can you see an opening? She asked Craig, peering hopelessly through the smeared windscreen.
Nothing. The forest was a dark green mattress below them.
I will try to pick two big trees and knock our wings off between them. That'll take the speed off us. But it's still going to be a daddy of a hit, she said, as she struggled with the panel of her side window.
I can knock it out for you, Tungata offered.
Good, Sally-Ann accepted. Tungata leaned over and with three blows of his bunched fist smashed the perspex sheet out of its frame.
Sally-Ann thrust her head out, slitting her eyes against the wind.
The earth came up towards them faster and faster and faster. The hills seemed to grow in size, beginning to tower above them, as Sally-Ann made a gentle gliding turn into a narrow valley. She had no airspeed indicator, so she was flying by the seat of her pants, holding up the nose to bleed off the speed. Through the hazy smear of the windshield, Craig saw the loom of the trees.
"Doors unlocked and open," Sally-Ann ordered. "Keep your straps fastened until we stop rolling. Then get out as fast as you can and run like a pack of long, thin dogs."
She pulled up the nose. The Cessna stalled, and the nose dropped again like a stone. But she had judged it to a microsecond, for before it could drop through the horizontal, she hit the trees. The wings were plucked out of the Cessna, and they were hurled against their shoulder straps with a force that grazed away the skin and bruised their flesh. But even though the impact took most of their speed off, the dismembered carcass of the aircraft went slithering and banging into the forest. They were slammed from side to side and shaken in their seats, the fuselage slewing violently and wrapping sideways around the base of another tree, and coming at last to rest.
"Out!" yelled Sally-Ann. "I can smell gas. Get out and run!"
The open doors had been ripped away from their hinges, and they flung off their seat belts and tumbled out onto the rocky ground. And they ran. Craig caught up with Sally-Ann. The scarf had come off her head, and her long, dark tresses streamed behind her. He reached out and put an arm around her shoulders, guided her towards the lip of a dry ravine, and they leapt into it and crouched, panting, on the sandy bottom, clinging to each other.
"Is she gonna flame out?" Sally-Ann gasped.
"Wait for it." He held her, and they tensed themselves for the whooshing detonation of leaking gasoline and the explosion of the main tanks. Nothing happened, and the silence of the bush settled over them, so they spoke in awed whispers.
"You fly like an angel," he said. "An angel with broken wings."
They waited another minute.
"By the way," he whispered,
"what the hell is a long, thin dog?"
"A greyhound," she giggled with reaction from fear.
"A dachshund is a long, short dog."
And he found he was giggling with her as they hugged each other.
"Take a look."
She was still laughing nervously. They stood up cautiously and peered over the rim of the ravine. The fuselage was crushed, and the metal skin of the Cessna had crumpled like aluminium foil. But there was no fire. They climbed out of the ravine.
"Sam!"
Craig called.
"Sarah!"
The two of them stood up from where they had taken cover at the foot of the rocky side of the valley.
"Are you all right?"
All four of them were shaken and bruised. Sarah had a bloodied nose and a scratch on her cheek, but none of them had been seriously hurt.
"What the hell do we do now?"
Craig asked. And they stood in a huddle and looked at each other helplessly.